So we all read the books, right? Good to Great, Rockefeller Habits, yada, yada. And they are great. They are wonderful books. What they miss or lack, though, is a way to actually install it. How do you actually run it that way and know you're running it that way? I think a lot of times. And so what I loved about EOS, I actually heard about it at some conference and I was like, this is intriguing. So I read all the books and it's really like a project plan. You install it in your company or association. It was originally created for startups and for-profit companies. So I feel like everybody suffers a bit from holding people accountable. It's hard. It's hard to do sometimes, hard to measure what people are spending time on, et cetera. And I like that about this plan, that everything is really transparent from my role all the way through.
This is Associations Thrive, the podcast celebrating successful associations and their leaders. I'm your host, Joanna Pineda, CEO and Chief Troublemaker at Matrix Group International. Listen in as top association executives tell all, revealing the creative and innovative ways they're increasing membership, generating revenue, nurturing engagement, and reimagining their organizations. By the way, if you've launched a new initiative, created new member services, or updated your governance structure and are seeing great results, I want to hear your story and so do my listeners. I'd love to have you as a guest. Go to podcast.matrixgroup.net and apply to be on Associations Thrive. Now let's dive into this week's show. Today, I'm speaking with Addie Cuiava, CEO at the American Alliance of Orthopedic Executives, or AAOE. Addie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Addie, tell us about AAOE.
Sure. So AAOE serves the orthopedic executives in any type of practice across the country. We're a national professional association. We have about 550 practices we represent, just under 1,300 members. And our members really consist of mostly the kind of C-suite folks in the practice or the hospital, et cetera, environments. We do have some clinical folks, so some orthopedic surgeons or athletic trainers, et cetera. But the majority are kind of the C-suite folks that are really focused on the business side of the practices or departments.
Addie, a couple years ago, my son broke his arm and we went to a practice called Ortho Virginia. Who at Ortho Virginia would be a member?
So in actuality, anyone.
Ah.
Any of them can be. So if they're interested in the business side of the practice, we encourage them to join. Way back in the day, AAOE only allowed the most senior CEO person to join the organization. But even back then, mergers, acquisitions, and things were happening. And they realized having such a broader membership brought so much more flavor and information and brainstorming into the organization. So truly, if you have an interest in orthopedic practice management or musculoskeletal practice management, you can be a member of AAOE.
So Addie, it's practice management for the purpose of what? Being more profitable, having a better patient experience, having a better staff experience. What's the end goal for becoming a member?
All of the above. It focuses on how can we bring more revenue in? How can we save on our expenses? How can we find and keep staff? And how can we make our environment the best for our patients? Keep flow fast, but touch high.
I love that. Well, we got a lot to talk about when it comes to AAOE. What an interesting association. But I want to focus on your journey. So how do you get to become CEO of AAOE?
Well, for me, you start as a busser in a restaurant. Just kidding. But I did go from a restaurant where I was a unit manager for a couple of locations in Wisconsin. And a friend of mine who was just finishing college said, I want to move to Chicago. And I know you've always wanted to live in Chicago. Do you want to go? And I said, yes, I do. But I had no job. So I moved with her to Chicago, signed up to a bunch of temp agencies, also restaurants, ended up in the interview selection process for a brand new department at the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. And I ended up coming in as their administrative assistant over 10 years, I worked my way up there from an assistant all the way up to the number two role in that department, and did everything from building $250,000 accessible playground builds to juried art shows from artists around the world. And it's funny because before I worked at the Academy, I really had never made my 2-year anniversary anywhere before. I just couldn't like find my home. And once I got there, I fell in love and I never left. So I stayed there for 10 years and my boss at the time was not looking to retire anytime soon. So I was encouraged by her as well as our HR department to go up for a CEO role in one of the specialty societies that were managed in-house at the AAOS. So I thought maybe that was too big of a jump, but since they believed in me, I went ahead and made the leap. I interviewed for 2 different roles and I got the second one, which was AAOE, and I have been there for 15 years, almost 16.
Okay, so Addie, let's rewind this a little bit. So you became CEO of AAOE, and at the time it was a specialty group managed by AAOS.
Mm-hmm.
But it is no longer managed by AAOS. So tell us about that journey.
It was very exciting. It was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun too, I have to say. So after a couple of years working for AAOE under AAOS, we received a management renewal contract and the board asked me to run some numbers, put together a pro forma. They wanted to know if they could go out on their own and be on their own. So I did all the work and research and crunched the numbers and shared that with them. And they decided to actually move out under a accounting firm in another state. So at the time we were located in Illinois, of course, and we moved the association down into Indiana where I rehired all the staff or new staff. And just that move alone, we saved enough to add on a whole nother staff person at the time. And then we worked under that accounting firm. They did our books, et cetera, you know, our phones, all those kinds of things. So it was like a management company, but not in the true sense. It was more like shared space and services. We did that for a few years. And in 16, we decided we wanted to truly be independent. And the board went through that process. I again did all the pro formas and business plans and all that kind of stuff. And we moved into our own space in 2016 and are still in that building actually right now.
Addie, why would an organization like AAOE decide to essentially leave the umbrella AAOS? Because AAOS is a giant organization with a lot of resources. Why go independent?
I think they just really wanted to have complete control over everything in their organization and to really be able to run it. And in an AMC type environment, you're so many layers below the CEO or the other folks. So there is a lot of hoops at times, not in a negative way, but just, you know, you have hoops that you got to run through to make major changes or change your due structure, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that was just a matter of like, we want to own our thing. Also, I will say the members are truly just incredible. They love their organization. So when they began it, it was literally a newsletter that they mailed out to each other. And then they sort of grew it. And then they volunteer ran it. And then they brought in an exec. And then they went under AAOS. And so I think they were just felt it was time to be their own thing.
I can't even imagine what it takes to take an organization independent. I mean, you got to change the bylaws. You got to change the registrations. You got to set up your own health plan. So that's very different from interviewing for the job within AAOS and then now kind of being responsible for everything. What was that like?
It was crazy. And I worried at times that I maybe didn't know enough to do what they needed me to do. I had young kids at the time because at the same time we were moving states. So not only did we move out from under AAOS, but at that same time we moved down to Indiana. So I was traveling back and forth interviewing new staff. I had asked some to come with us, but that's a big ask to ask anybody to move states.
Yeah, yeah.
On top of that, it was find a place to live, find schools, et cetera. But I'll tell you, spreadsheets and Access database were my friends at that time. Most people probably don't remember Access, but I did a lot of research. I called on a lot of people, a lot of peers in the association community, really to help me go through the process and understand everything that was needed. And my board members were super helpful because they had built their own practices. They had built AFCs. They had rented buildings and space and all that.
they are people who run organizations, and so they could really help you out.
Yeah, and they really did. Yeah, super supportive.
And on balance, was the decision to go independent a positive one?
For sure. And not just from a financial perspective. I think it's just you're able to do what you want when you want. I mean, the board truly is the boss then. It's not the board via other staff. It's not the board says this and you have to run it up the flagpole to see if it's okay or any of those things. They just had direct control of the organization through me. So we could adapt, evolve, change, risk, you know, whatever we wanted to do without any hoops at all. I mean, beyond a board vote and bandwidth. I mean, obviously there are hoops you jump through as any type of organization, but it reduced them significantly and we became much more nimble.
Addie, what does AAOE look like now? How many staff? Where's the office? How do you run it?
Yeah, we have our biggest team ever to date so far. So we have 9 full-time, 2 part-time. We have several contracted folks, such as a digital marketing team. We have our sales team. When I started, we had 4 employees, including me, so 3 staff and me. And so it feels like a great big team at this point. It's grown a lot. Our headquarters is still based in Indianapolis, though our lease runs out actually near the end of next year, and we're going to investigate, but the feeling is pretty mutual among the team to go fully remote, which we all support. We have staff all over. We have staff in Wisconsin, Virginia, Illinois, Indiana, and then we have one that bounces between Colorado and Nashville.
You know, I did that. Our lease was up at the end of March, and we kept a couple of offices at a Regis, but the feeling on the part of the staff really was, can we just maintain the remote office, because there really wasn't appetite for coming back into the office. So that's what we did.
For the team, I think there are so many positives. I think you have to have the things in place for accountability and transparency. I think you have to be very vigilant and proactive for connection. You have to create that space to make sure that people get together. We have a staff retreat every fall where we all come in and we spend a day and a half together, and some of it's work, but a lot of it's play. Just to, again, just reconnect on that kind of water cooler level, right? Where you're just chatting about what's happening in your life. And then we do different things throughout the year, bring your own lunch kind of things. And we just know we need to make time for each other. We need time to sometimes vent or chat or whatever. You have to make it happen in a virtual environment because you can't just pop into somebody's office.
Yeah, 100%.
But we're very cognizant about that and make sure to work those things into it to make sure that everybody can speak up when they need to and feel appreciated and acknowledged and part of the bigger picture.
Well, speaking of culture, you know, during the prep, you talked about how in 2019, you introduced EOS, which is the Entrepreneurial Operating System. Wow. For listeners who are not familiar with EOS, please explain what this is. This is amazing.
It is my favorite thing. I could talk to you for days about EOS. So we all read the books, right? Good to Great, Rockefeller Habits, yada, yada. And they are great. They are wonderful books. What they miss or lack, though, is a way to actually install it. How do you actually run it that way and know you're running it that way? I think a lot of times. And so what I loved about EOS, I actually heard about it at some conference and I was like, this is intriguing. So I read all the books and it's really like a project plan. You install it in your company or association. It was originally created for startups and for-profit companies.
Yes.
So I feel like everybody suffers a bit from holding people accountable. It's hard. It's hard to do sometimes, hard to measure what people are spending time on, et cetera. And I like that about this plan, that everything is really transparent from my role all the way through. So I thought we should install it. So I met with my number 2 and we had some meetings around it and decided that we would do it for 90 days because everything in EOS runs on a 90-day cycle. I said, let's do it for 90 days. If we hate it, nobody will be the wiser. If we love it, we'll know exactly how it works and we'll have all this experience and we'll have figured out some of the issues and the positives and we can share all that as we bring it into the rest of the team. So we did our 90 days, loved it.
Addie, did you bring in a consultant? Because many companies will bring in somebody to help them kick it off. What'd you do?
We did not for the initial test run, beta test, I guess I would call it. I presented it to the team, and I did say it has to be a team choice because EOS really does involve the entire team. Everybody needs to be on board. And I was like, if we don't want to do it, then we won't do it. But if we all want to do it, then I want to dig in and do it right. And I gave them a couple of days to take the materials home and gave them what the heck is EOS book. We all discussed it and all agreed we wanted to do it. So at that time, I looked for an implementer, and the implementer is the consultant that is super trained in EOS and comes in and helps you really push everything through.
What did this look like then, the first 90 days and then the subsequent 90 days? Like, what kind of entrepreneurial things did you do and what did the plan look like?
It was chaos, Joanna. No, I'm just kidding.
Initially, it probably was, and then it turned into a really great process.
It really did. But I think it's doing things on a whole different, I don't want to say level even, but there's a whole different pathway to follow. So for example, we have our org chart, but in EOS, it's called an accountability chart. And it's not dictated by the people you have. It's dictated by the roles you need. So very first and foremost, it was like, these are the roles we need, but these people don't fit, or we don't have these people, but we can move these few around. That was probably our toughest obstacle, was getting the accountability chart right. And it took a couple of years just because I didn't want to just be like, oh, we're installing this and now people have to leave. So we worked on retraining, retooling some staff to keep them, but move them into another role, et cetera. And it's a living document, I mean, your org chart. And so we review it every 90 days, 6 months or so, and retool it if we need to.
Every 90 days, you're looking at your org chart?
This is something that people don't like about EOS. It's an extremely redundant practice. I love it because I'm one of those people that would be like, please tell me three times and don't worry because I'm not going to get mad. I'd rather you tell me three times. Then I miss something. In an EOS, you are constantly recommitting to the process. So every 90 days, you're coming up with new rocks that point to your one-year goals. Those point to your three-year goals that point to your 10-year targets. But you're constantly reprocessing the information. You're looking at your metrics. You're looking at your scorecard. You're looking at your financials. What's working and what isn't? What do we need to do to get to where we need to be? And of course, all that strategy level is set by the board of directors. But once you get past the three-year picture, it's really up to the team to figure out, but how are we going to make that happen? And it makes it very easy. And it's extremely transparent, which I think is another big benefit of EOS.
Addie, what did EOS allow you to do? What's been the result?
I think it creates such a nimble organization. There's so much innovation going on. We try new things every year, and usually it's anywhere from 3 to 5 new things, just because it allows us to focus on the most important work. And so you can build upon that and change. It also gives everybody the same voice in your meetings that you have, the way they're structured. Everybody has the same voice. So anybody can come up with an idea. Anybody can ask a question. Anybody can call each other out, even to me. So I think it just creates this really level playing field for everyone where it's not supervisors holding their people accountable. It's each other. We're in it together. We're holding each other accountable. We want to all row in the same direction. We want to see this success happen. And it's very measurable. So you're constantly getting reinforced. Rocks are done. We hit the numbers. Or we didn't. That, of course, happens too. And then you shift. You adjust. Every 90 days, you can adjust. Oh, that's not working for us. Let's not do it again. This is working for us. Can we do it faster? Can we do it bigger? Can we do it longer? And then continue to evolve in that way.
You know, what's lovely about this is if something isn't working and you're measuring it, you can sunset it and sunset it fast.
Correct.
But what's been the reaction of the members? Like, are they noticing something new and different, or did they notice right away?
Yeah, I think our engagement tells us that, if they're engaging in the new things or not. I would say some are subtle that maybe they wouldn't even notice that they're different, but we've improved something in a way that we know makes it smoother or faster, their user experience or something like that. I would say our surveys consistently will tell us, like, they appreciated this new way of teaching or these new tracks at the conference or this new experience we brought into conference or this new whole event that we do every year. We get a lot of really positive feedback, and it's not just members, it's our vendors too. So we've incorporated a lot of new things for our vendors over the years, including an industry relations advisory board where they have a voice in everything we do that is vendor facing. That's how we're able to shift and change. And you can hear everybody's voice if you're shutting down things that don't work fast.
Hmm. So what kind of things did you introduce in 2025?
This year, we started Demo Days, which is an offshoot of what ASAE does, but I always say I'm a big fan of R&D, which is research and duplicate.
Love that.
So if somebody else is having success, I would like to try it as well. But also, I am very generous with any of my materials. So when people need anything, I'm happy to share. So we're doing Demo Days. We just finished our second one. We literally just did it yesterday, so I don't have the results of that yet, but it sold out. And then our first one, we got the highest survey response levels of any event we've done.
Wow.
It was incredible. And that was both vendor and attendee side. The other thing that we tried with that event was to do no lists for the vendors.
What does that mean, no lists for the vendors?
They couldn't have any member information. They could be anonymous in the room and participate in the demo. And then they would need to reach out to the vendors versus us sending you a list. You pay money, you get a list. You pay money, you get a list.
Ah.
So we're just trying to break out of that mold a little bit, because that isn't the only way to measure if a program was successful or not. So I'm trying to think. We are doing our second Women in Medical Practice Management event in 2 weeks. We just did our first one last year in September. So we're doing another one this year in November. Some other ideas that we are trying this year, we have a member engagement task force that we're working through with some of our, well, it's all kinds of different members, some very longtime members, past board members, brand new members, to really understand what did they need and how do they need it right now. We started a young and new professionals council that is from last year, but it is really robust this year. They actually wrote a whole resource on the 20 things you should know as a new incoming practice exec.
Addie, this all sounds very exciting. How do you introduce these new things without tripling the staff load?
I let them come up with the ideas.
Yeah, but it's still additional work. Are you sunsetting other ideas?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
That's a good point. I say that flippantly, but truly part of it is listening to everybody's ideas both ways. What do we need to stop doing and what do we need to start doing? A good example of that is this year, one of the staff said we need to expand our education program, our online webinar program. It needs to be segmented, specific, hot topics, real time. So we went from 12 to 15 webinars a year to 50 this year.
Oh my God.
Right. So in reviewing that, it's like it took every single staff person to make it happen, a little bit here, a little bit there. But our registration rates were higher, our participation rates were higher. So we know it works. Now, to be able to do something like that, you have to be able to cut other things. And that's that process every 90 days of what's working and what's not. That is part of your quarterly meeting, is to talk through what's working at the organization and what isn't. And so that's where we'll cut. And of course, we bring the board in. So board has their ideas. We'll bring them data and things. But I think it saves us from having any sacred cows that people talk about a lot. Because if I can show that it's not working, which you always can in EOS, it's a much easier conversation than we just don't have time to do it anymore because we want to do the new things.
Addie, this is so inspiring. I mean, you're really painting the picture of an organization that's nimble and responsive and also really fun, it sounds like, because people kind of get to try stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
Addie, it's fourth quarter 2025. How are you closing out the year?
I am really happy with how we're closing out the year. We had some really new successful endeavors this year, like Demo Days. I know Women in Practice Management will be successful. And we're ending the year far ahead of budget than we anticipated. We had extra spending this year as well that was necessary, and we didn't realize we would need it this year, but we're more than covered with plenty of extra, which feels really good. And I'll say one personal thing I'm very proud of is that we did a staff satisfaction survey this year, and we got a 25 NPS score, which might sound bad, but when you compare it out there, it's actually super good. And so I'm really proud of that, and I'm really proud of our team. I think we work so well together. I think it'll be wonderful to be able to go into the year-end celebrations knowing we won this year. We were so successful. The team is engaged. They are excited and head into a new year with all of that positive momentum behind us.
Well, it sounds like you had an amazing 2025. We'll have to have you back because I want to hear about the new things you're doing in 26.
Ooh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Associations Thrive. We're so glad to have you here. You know, my personal mission and the mission of my company, Matrix Group International, is to help associations and nonprofits increase membership, generate revenue, and thrive in the digital space. I want to hear stories of how your organization is thriving in today's challenging landscape. Please apply to be on my show by going to podcast.matrixgroup.net. By the way, do you need help with a digital initiative? Maybe it's a website redesign, a new membership database, or a hybrid meeting that you're planning. I'd love to connect with you. Please visit the Matrix Group website at matrixgroup.net. Thanks again for listening to this week's episode of Associations Thrive. Don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a 5-star rating, post a comment, and share it with your colleagues and friends.